rise. Oye. All persons having business before the Honorable United States Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims, draw nigh and give your attention, for this court is now in session. God save the United States and its honorable court. Please be seated.
Good morning.
Good morning.
This is the matter of Darlene S. Seipert. Versus Peak. Are the parties ready to proceed?
Yes, Your Honor.
Would counsel representing the parties state their name for the record?
Landino B. Chisholm Kilpatrick for Ms. Seipert. And joining me at counsel table is also Robert Chisholm of the same law firm. Thank you, Your Honor.
Good morning, Your Honor. Paul Hutter on behalf of the Secretary. With me is Leslie Rogal, also representing the Secretary.
Welcome, Mr. Hutter.
Thank you so much.
All right, each side has 30 minutes to argue. Mr. Overby, do you wish to reserve any time?
Your Honor, with the court's permission, I'd like to reserve 10 minutes of my time for rebuttal.
10?
Yes, Your Honor.
Very well, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. The court should reverse the decision of the Board of Veterans' Appeals that concluded Mrs. Seipert is not entitled to dependents' educational assistance benefits under Title 38, United States Code, Chapter 35. As explained in Ms. Seipert's opening brief and reply brief, VA could not have fulfilled the requirements of the statutes and regulation regarding a final determination of eligibility and the beginning date of her eligibility period until she married the veteran in January 2004 and therefore became an eligible person within the meaning of Section 3501. Section 3501 clearly states that an eligible person is the spouse of any person who has a total disability, permanent in nature, from a service-connected disability. With respect to periods of eligibility, the law provides that a person made eligible by subparagraph B or D of Section 3501A1 of this title may be afforded educational assistance under this chapter during the 10-year period beginning on the date, as determined by the Secretary, the person becomes an eligible person within the meaning of Section 3501. There is no doubt that Congress clearly intended that there would be a 10-year period of assistance. The critical language of the statute, however, is, beginning on the date, as determined by the Secretary, the person becomes an eligible person within the meaning of Section 3501. That language makes clear that Congress tasks the Secretary only with making the essential findings of fact to determine whether a person is indeed an eligible person within the meaning of Section 3501. For example, the Secretary must only determine whether the person is a spouse of a veteran, 2, whether the veteran has a total service-connected disability, and 3, whether the total disability is permanent in nature. Ms. Seipert's construction of 38 CFR 21.3046 is entirely consistent with the statutory language utilized in 3501 and 3512. The entire emphasis in Section 3501 as well as 3512, including the regulatory language, is when the person becomes an eligible person. That is the entire emphasis.
Counselor, if I may interrupt.
Yes, Your Honor.
Your interpretation of 38 CFR 21.3046 doesn't seem to square with the congressional intent, which focuses on the veteran and not necessarily the veteran's wives or subsequent wives. Can you address that?
Your Honor, I believe congressional intent is the focus on the eligible person. Both 3501 and 3512, as well as 3510 and 3511, each focus on the eligible person. The eligible person is the spouse of the veteran who, in this particular case, has a total disability that's service-connected and is permanent in nature. And with respect to the regulation itself, the preceding language speaks to, for spouses for whom VA made a final determination of eligibility after October 27, 1986, the effective date of rating, the date of notification, or any of the two dates between. So with respect to that, everything is speaking towards a spouse in that regard.
Well, Just a minute. Now, why would a rating be relating to a spouse?
Why would a rating be related to a spouse? It's because that's what VA has indicated in their manual provisions, that a rating is not necessarily per se a disability rating as suggested by the Secretary in their brief.
The date of the rating, meaning the date of the 100% rating?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. The date of the rating where they make a determination regarding the spouse's eligibility, because the regulation has to be read in context and as a whole. And it says, for spouses for whom VA made a final determination of eligibility, the rating is a decision referencing that Mrs. Seipert or any other spouse, for that matter, would actually be entitled to Chapter 35 benefits.
Do you see a delimiting period at all in 3512?
A delimiting period? Yes, Your Honor, 10 years.
And where does it say that 10 years begins?
It says, beginning on the date as determined by the Secretary, the person becomes an eligible person within the meaning of Section 3501.
And an eligible person is a person who is married to a veteran who has 100% disability.
That is correct. And Ms. Seipert couldn't have become an eligible person within the meaning of both 3501 as well as 3512 until she married the veteran in January 2004. That would be entirely consistent with the statutory framework. And the purpose of these benefits is to actually ensure that a veteran who is permanently totally disabled due to a service-connected disability is to permit that spouse or the children to go to school to help offset perhaps a lost income. It would be counterproductive to determine that even prior to Mr. and Mrs. Seipert becoming married, that she would already lose her entitlement to benefits. Because, for example, if Mr. Seipert were to die today, she's entitled tomorrow.
Well, Counselor, under your theory, is there any limit in terms of the 10-year periods or numbers of wives or anything of that nature?
No, Your Honor.
Okay. So if wife number one has been married for 9 years and she's coming up on the 10th anniversary of this determination, if she and the veteran get divorced and then subsequently remarried, has she just rekindled her eligibility period?
I don't think I'm following your hypothetical.
Wife number one.
Correct.
Married when veterans determined to be eligible for this educational benefit or veteran spouse. They then get a divorce and then get remarried, let's say 2 years later or 2 years after the 10 years have elapsed. Is she now eligible again?
I believe so. In that regard, if there was a determination in the first instance that she, by the Secretary, that she was entitled to benefits, it's a 10-year period, but the primary thing is 45 months, aggregate months, of school assistance. That's
not pertinent to my question. My question is she now eligible to utilize those benefits if she hadn't used them the first time?
I believe she is, Your Honor.
Okay. So if you're coming upon your benefits lapsing, under your argument, all you have to do is get a divorce and then subsequently get remarried, and that rekindles your eligibility.
I believe so, Your Honor. Under the statute, it says 10-year periods. And with respect to 3511, it speaks that whenever the person becomes divorced, they can continue going to school up until the end of the semester. But I believe the focus in the statute is 10 years. And it speaks to each eligible person.
You know, looking at the legislative history, now I'll grant you that there seems to be an absence of a model of clarity here. But looking at the legislative history, I think that does not necessarily support your interpretation of what Congress intended. Maybe you can enlighten me on that.
Well, Your Honor, I believe with respect to the language itself, the legislative history, it may not support my position, but I believe the plain language of the regulation speaks to a 10-year period for the eligible person, and that the language of the statute is plain, and it doesn't set out any exceptions that if there are divorces, it just says a 10-year period beginning on the date the person becomes an eligible person. So if that individual became an eligible person at a subsequent point in time, then they would be entitled to 10 years of educational assistance. With respect to Mrs. Seipert, however, Mrs. Seipert clearly satisfies the requirements to be an eligible person within the meaning of Section 3501, but that could not have occurred until she married the veteran in January 2004. The board's conclusion to the contrary is legally incorrect, and the court should reverse the board's conclusion. The appeal should be remanded with an instruction to conduct further proceedings consistent with Sections 3501 and 3512 and this court's opinion.
Why do you think the Secretary has a different view of the statute than you do?
I think the Secretary has a different view of the statute, is because the Secretary focuses on an alternative section, subsection of 3512. While we understand that that is could be a possible date for Mrs. Seipert to choose, it's an alternative date. It just gives Mrs. Seipert the opportunity to focus on a later beginning date. For example, if a veteran, because the claims process can take 3, 4, 5 years for a veteran to eventually be notified. Assume, for example, that Mrs. Seipert had not actually gone to school, but she was married to the veteran at the time, but the veteran is notified 5 years down the road that he is finally awarded permanent total. Obviously, it would be retroactive to when he filed his claim, so she would be covered under that retroactive date, but she could choose under subsection B1 Big B to, with the Secretary's approval, obviously, to elect the later beginning date, which would be the date that the Secretary actually notified the veteran, whereas B1 Big A speaks to the date that she becomes an eligible person. In this case, she became an eligible person when she married in January 2004.
So the Secretary focuses on when the 10-year period begins, and from that derives a limitation on the eligibility of the spouse themselves. They're taking subsection Big B and swallowing the predecessor paragraph Big A. In other words, as I understand your argument, the eligibility of a spouse is first determined by looking at 3501A1.
That's correct, Your Honor.
And this eligibility of a spouse comes into play when, one, they are a spouse, and two, they have they're married to a veteran who has the disabilities, 100% disability. That in a situation where a young soldier is married and comes back and has been injured, the 10-year period would begin when his disabilities arise or when he's notified, and you have those dates that you can pick.
They're all
because she is, Sorry. Could be a he, but the spouse of the soldier is already a spouse. And the Secretary has taken that and written into B1A, if you're not a spouse at that time or during the 10-year period, you can't get any particular benefits.
That's correct.
Is there any support in the purpose or the specific language of this statute that the Secretary points to that supports that conclusion?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. I think with respect to that, the way the construction of the statute and the regulation is precisely what you're talking about is a situation where it's presumed that a veteran will always be married whenever it comes to Chapter 35 benefits. That may not be the fact.
So is there any congressional intent that would say to a veteran who served his country, came back wounded, got married 11 years later, that that spouse would not be entitled to educational benefits to better themselves, better herself or himself, to help the veteran and herself or himself in this marriage? Is there any congressional intent to support that?
I believe the congressional intent speaks to making sure that the spouse can become educated so she can provide support.
A later married spouse?
Even a later married, yes. With respect to 3510 and 3511, it speaks to each eligible person. And again, I think that's the emphasis throughout the statutory framework.
So if you look at this statutory framework, you'd look at B1A and you'd say that your entitlement begins the date the person becomes an eligible person. And the paragraph, as determined by the Secretary, I presume the Secretary's view is that they can determine you're an eligible person, and they can, I assume it's unfettered in the Secretary's view. But the statute clearly turns to 3501, and it's very, very narrow, a spouse of a disabled veteran. Once you have that eligibility, then under B, the spouse can elect a different time period.
That is correct.
And as I read the statute here, it says may subject to the Secretary's approval, elect a later beginning date for a 10-year period than would otherwise be applicable to the person under the subparagraph. But a later marrying wife has no later date that might be applicable, except perhaps death. But in the case of actually awarding benefits, it wouldn't be a later date. It would only be if there were a death later.
It would only be if there was an eligible person. And the parenthetical, as determined by the Secretary, we believe that means that the Secretary is only tasked with making the essential findings of fact within the confines of 3501. That's a spouse of a veteran who is a total...
No, I got that part, but into B and how B applies, a spouse who got married 20 years later, that would be her initial period under B1A. She could elect a later period if one existed, but one doesn't exist under B1B.
That would be correct, because if the veteran had already been notified that he or she was entitled to 100% permanent total disability rating, then B goes out the
door. There'd be no reason for a spouse to so select those earlier dates anyway.
Correct.
Thank you.
There are no further questions?
I have a further question.
Certainly.
Your brief seemed to indicate you were trying to read the regulations consistent with your view of this statute. If it's viewed that the regulations are not consistent, but in fact the regulations attempt to tie down a disability beginning even before someone became eligible under the statute, tied in a sense to the veteran's own disability, I presume your view would be that the regulation needs to be overturned.
Well, it would be unlawful, Your Honor, because it clearly would be contrary to Section 3501. It would seem to me that it would be absurd to actually permit the Secretary to authorize a beginning date prior to the person even becoming an eligible person.
Right, and let me go back further. There's some discussion in the Secretary's brief, and you can elaborate on later, about a case out of this court, Ozer, I believe, that talked in terms of the 10-year period.
Certainly.
And, in fact, may have eliminated that 10-year period, depending on how you read that. And so VA apparently went up, got a change, and clearly you agree there is a 10-year period. The only issue here is when it begins.
That is correct, Your Honor, and with one caveat, now that the statute has been subsequently amended, if this were to go back in Ms. Seifert's favor, she would actually possibly be entitled to a 20-year period because they have added, expanded that period of time. But okay. That, for the purposes of the board decision in this case, it would be a 10-year period of time.
Thank you.
Mr. Overby, yesterday I received your supplemental citation to authority.
Yes, Your Honor.
Which apparently you submitted pursuant to Rule 30B, and it came to your attention after you had filed your brief.
That is correct, Your Honor.
And that was M22-4, basically, is the substance of that. So tell us how that fits into this paradigm that you've developed.
With respect to the provisions that were submitted, Your Honor, whenever I was reviewing the pleadings for preparation for the oral argument, I was reading the government's argument again with respect to disability ratings. I think it's on page 9 or 10 of their brief, and they cite to the court's decision in Conary. The M22 provisions speak to, they intermix and identify rating as not only a disability rating, but in the context of that there would be a rating in the context of practitioners. Having worked at the regional office, it means a decision of the regional office. So that's where it goes to the context of 38 CFR 21.3046, that the rating doesn't necessarily speak to the veteran. It's the spouse's rating because of the way the language is read as a whole. And the entire emphasis of the M22 provisions speaks to the spouse claimant. The latter section of the M22 provisions, I believe it's at page 3-13, talks to the claimant being notified of when the effective date, because it talks that if you can get past the eligible person aspect, you have to notify the spouse of certain dates of ratings. And the ratings, again, goes along with our argument that the rating applies to the spouse herself, because otherwise VA would have inserted the effective date of the veteran's rating, the date of notification to the veteran. That's just not there. It speaks immediately to the spouse herself.
But you were aware of 22 2001-4 some time ago. It's been around since 99, I think, hasn't it?
I've heard of it in the past, but I didn't see the need that it would actually have to go there with respect, since it, we're talking about the regulation, and the regulation would be consistent with the statute. And I just learned of the actual specific provisions that we brought forward when I was preparing for this oral argument, Your Honor. So I do apologize for the delay in getting those to you.
Well, I'm not sure that Rule 30B anticipates a serve rebuttal opportunity. I think it's for precedent or decisions that might arise between the filing of the brief and the time of oral argument, but that's my interpretation. Thank you.
Let me recap your position, and this goes as an extension of Judge Lance's question to you. A veteran then could be married and have a spouse that, veteran with 100% disability, has a spouse that does 45 months of education, and then divorce that spouse, and then remarry another person, and then that person could then be educated?
For a 10-year period, beginning on the date that the secretary makes
and so on and so on, at every 8th anniversary, he divorces that wife and marries someone else, and then that next wife could then get 10 years to get an education.
That would be correct, Your Honor.
Infinitum.
That would be correct. Under 3510, it speaks to each eligible person will be entitled to these benefits.
Okay.
And if the
second... Just want to make sure that was your theory.
Certainly.
Okay.
If there are no further questions, thank you, Your Honor.
Ms. Tutter?
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court. It's my honor to once again appear before this Court. I believe my last appearance was in 1993 when I appeared before an en banc session in the equal access to justice case of Jones versus Brown. Thank you for having
me back.
I
read about that.
The case before the Court involves Mrs. Darlene Seipert, the wife of Mr. Jerry Seipert, a Vietnam veteran, who received a 100% service-connected disability rating for post-traumatic stress disorder in 1984. Which rating became permanent and total in October 1990. The Seipert story that's relevant to this case began on January 8, 2004, when Mrs. Seipert began taking classes at the Northwest Technical College in Green Bay, Wisconsin, pursuing an associate's degree in community corrections and criminal justice. On January 23, 2004, Mr. and Mrs. Seipert were married. By that time, of course, Mr. Seipert had been receiving benefits for PTSD as a permanent and total disability rating for some 13 years. On the day after her marriage, January 24th, Mrs. Seipert filled out her declaration for dependency status and her application for survivors and dependents benefits, and the Milwaukee Regional Office received the documents on January 28th. The issue in this case is whether Congress intended for spouses who marry permanently and totally disabled service-connected disabled veterans more than 10 years after the veteran receives that rating to receive the educational benefits. In other words, did Congress, by imposing a 10-year qualification period after an award of permanent and total disability, intend that educational benefits provide for spouses who marry into situations of permanent and total disability, or did it intend this benefit as a vehicle for spouses to adjust to that situation and gain or regain entree into the working community? The applicable statutes, regulation, and legislative history associated with 38 U.S.C. Section 3512 makes clear that Congress intended to assist spouses whose loved ones become so disabled during the 10-year period after the qualifying rating that they are no longer able to substantially contribute to the household, the veteran, the permanently and totally disabled veteran, thereby requiring the spouse to go back to work in order to supplement the household income. Accordingly, Mrs. Seipert would not qualify, and the decision of the Board of Veterans' Appeals is correct.
Where is that purpose written?
Your Honor, there are several places it's written, but thank you. I was going to turn to the statutory construction at this point. We could start with 38 U.S.C. 3500, Your Honor, in which it states in part that
The educational program is extended to surviving spouses of veterans who died of service-connected disabilities and to spouses of veterans with a service-connected total disability, permanent in nature. It is for the purpose of assisting them in preparing to support themselves and their families at a standard of living level which the veteran, but for the veteran's death or service disability, could have expected to provide for the veteran's family. That purpose also, Your Honor, to directly answer your question, is reflected in Exhibit 1 to our brief, which cites the legislative history. And the legislative history in this case is a Senate report. And that report relied on the U.S. Veterans Advisory Commission back in 1968 when this statute was originally crafted. And the clear expression of intent is that this statute is intended to ensure that spouses whose veteran spouse is either permanently and totally disabled during the course of the marriage or who dies during the course of the marriage is able to adjust to that changed circumstance in terms of loss of household income.
But don't we have a disconnect here? I mean, Exhibit 3 that you submitted, if you want to take a look at it.
Yes, Your Honor.
Has the statement of Dr. Mackey.
Yes, sir.
And it says that the purpose was to timely assist the eligible spouse in adjusting to the loss of aid and support from veteran. But Congress didn't say that. Congress said, in preparing to support themselves and their families at a standard of living. Where is there an intent to say that for 10 years somebody decides that they want to go to school or get married after they hadn't been married, and that the new spouse coming to this veteran who's disabled wants to go to school to help the family now? Mm-hmm. Where is there an intent to limit it to only right after the time period in which the veteran actually became disabled? I don't see that intent. It may have been in Dr. Mackey's statement, but it certainly is not in the statute.
Your Honor, the statute is not clear, and that's why we have to resort to this legislative issue.
Before we go with the statute not being clear, I'm talking about a general purpose. When we want to get into the definitions, if you want to show me how it's not clear, I'll be glad to listen. But on the purpose, there is a difference. Do you admit or do you agree that there's a difference from what Dr. Mackey was saying and what Congress actually wrote?
Dr. McKay was the Deputy Secretary, Your Honor, and I can't speak to his intent in amplifying the statute or arguing that the statute should be changed pursuant to the Ozer case.
We have legislative history,
yes, sir,
from the House in addition to the Senate, and specifically there it says to reinstate the 10-year limiting period, in which spouses may, and I quote, upon first becoming eligible, use DEA benefits. It doesn't say to create a 10-year period after the veteran gets disabled upon which a spouse might use it.
In our interpretation, Your Honor, if the congressional intent was to provide for a circumstance for a 10-year delimited period, originally 8 years, now 10, that would allow the spouse to go to school to reenter the job market because of the changed circumstance that her spouse or his spouse encountered as a result of either permanent and total disability or death of the veteran.
Where is the purpose of the statute? I mean, let's just go to the statute. It says in preparing to support themselves. It doesn't say because of the changed circumstance. It doesn't say within that 10-year period after the veteran's disabled. And we'll get into the actual statute, who's an eligible person. But even in the purpose, I'm not seeing what you're arguing.
Your Honor, if I could, the words preparing to support themselves and their families at a standard of living level which the veteran, but for his disability or her disability, could have expected to provide for the veteran's family.
And where does it say Congress said your expectations are only 10 years out, Mr. Veteran? You served our country, you came back wounded, and if you don't decide in 10 years you like the way you're living and you change your mind later on, too bad. Where does it say that?
We go back to the legislative history, Your Honor. That's where we're going. And
right,
if you'll
all
take a look back to Exhibit 1, Your Honor, if you'll permit me to uh, to expound on the legislative history a little bit. If you'll take a look at page 1 of Exhibit 1, background to recommendation number 30, and it talks about widows of veterans who die from service-connected disabilities often face an abrupt loss of adequate financial support and must, in many instances, adjust their living standards to a substantially lower level. Barring employment or remarriage, their expectations for income are limited to VA benefits that the veteran had been receiving, and perhaps to Social Security. At present, the current monthly DIC payment for all widows averages $153. We believe that that clause, that that argument that was referred to and adopted by the Congress in its report, is a clear indication that the 10 years is a delimiting period starting on the date that the veteran became totally and permanently disabled or, in unfortunate circumstances, passes away. That is amplified, if you will, Your Honor, by the notion of the word rating that you discussed with Mr. Overby previous in his argument. The notion of a rating, this court has decided, is only applies to average impairments of earning capacity resulting from diseases and injuries.
Before you get to a rating, okay, let's just go to 3501 definition.
Okay.
3501, little a, big D, little I.
Mm-hmm.
The term eligible person means any of the following: the spouse of any person who has a total disability, permanent in nature. So the appellant here falls within that definition, does she not?
Absolutely.
No question, under 3501. We agree.
No question
as
of...
Then let's go to 3512. B, little b, 1, big A. Except as provided in B or C, mm-hmm, a person made eligible by subparagraph B or D, we just said she's eligible under D, may be afforded educational assistance under this chapter during the 10-year period beginning on the date, as determined by the Secretary, the person becomes an eligible person within the meaning of Section 3501A1Di. Now, you just agreed she's an eligible person within that section.
That's correct, I did.
So she's an eligible person. Where under that section do you find that the 10-year period began sometime before this veteran who served his country came back and ultimately got married?
Your Honor, I think that we have to look at the parenthetical that says, as determined by the Secretary.
Right.
And we interpret that parenthetical to mean, and that's why we have a regulation that you uh-huh discussed with Mr. Uh-huh Overby, that the determination by the Secretary is the beginning date. And therefore, the Secretary determines the beginning date of the eligibility and promulgated a regulation in order to amplify that statement.
But there's only two criteria that the Secretary is guided by here under 3501A1DI. Only two criteria: a spouse, and certainly VA could say there's a sham marriage, it's not a marriage, etc. They didn't do that. I don't believe that's an issue here. And certainly did the board make that kind of finding?
No, Your Honor. What I would state is that we've made no finding. We never got to that point. But
there's no finding that she's married?
There's a finding that there's a marriage certificate, but I don't think that's an issue. Let's
All right. And there's no issue that he's, what, 100% disabled?
No, Your Honor.
Those are the two criteria. What else is the Secretary supposed to look at under 3501A1DI?
Your Honor, I think that we have to look through the eligibility period. There is a period of eligibility, and that period of eligibility is defined originally at 8, now 10 years, and that is what the 3512B1A requires the Secretary to define as the beginning date in the parenthetical that's in the statute. And for that reason...
Where does B... I'll take you right to B. Let's look at the statute. Where does it say, under B, that the Secretary can take the day you are eligible and ignore it and start a 10-year period before that? I mean, we all agree there's a 10-year period. So how does it begin before you even became eligible?
Your Honor, let me ask you. I'm not sure which B you're referring to, if I can...
Yeah, I agree. There's a lot of B's here. B1, big B. Is that what you were referring to?
3512, sir?
I'm sorry, yes. 3512. In other words, 3512B1A specifically references back, talks about eligibility, talks about when it begins. I think we just agreed on a 3501A1D little I. The claimant here, the appellant here, has that status. Now, the question that you're focusing on, I thought, was go on down to Big B in the same statutory provision we're talking about, which now talks about when that person, the appellant here, can elect their 10-year period. And they may elect it, it says specifically here, may, subject to the Secretary's approval, elect a later beginning date for the 10-year period, if applicable. It's not applicable here. There is no later date in her case because the veteran is not dead and she married now. A later 10-year period then would otherwise be applicable to the person under that subparagraph. Well, what's the provision, the beginning date, that's applicable under the subparagraph above? The only date applicable on the subparagraph above is her eligibility date, which is when she got married, in this case, to a veteran who is 100% disabled.
I understand your argument, Your Honor.
Well, no, I just want to make sure that we respectfully disagree. All right, then point that out.
Because we're really focusing not on 3512B1B, but on B1A.
All right, let's go back there.
And we're focusing on the language that indicates that the person becomes an eligible person within the meaning of the section. I'm sorry, go above that, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Let's start with of this title, or a person made eligible by the disability of a spouse under this title may be afforded educational assistance under this chapter during the 10-year period beginning on the date, parenthetical, as determined by the secretary.
Right, but go on.
The person becomes an eligible person within the meaning of the section.
So the date the person becomes an eligible person within the meaning of section 3501A1D1. How does the secretary read from that, determining that there's other than the two criteria we discussed?
There are two issues with respect to eligibility. That's our position. Position one is, are you married and did you get married to a permanently and totally disabled veteran?
Right.
The second issue of eligibility is the delimiting date, the period, the 10-year period.
Follow me here. This is where I think we're disconnecting. I just want to make sure, because I want to understand where we're disconnecting. We agree with the beginning. That sentence, however, specifically limits itself. The person becomes an eligible person within the meaning of 3501A1D1, mm-hmm. referenced here for this case. Within the meaning of 3501A1D1, it does not say within the meaning of sub B below. It does not say within the meaning of anything else. It says within the meaning of that paragraph.
But it does say, Your Honor, that the secretary determines the beginning date.
Within the meaning of?
Right.
3501A1D1.
Exactly.
Where in 3501A1D1, excuse me, DI, does it give the secretary latitude to look at some other criteria besides spouse and disability?
We believe that the as determined by the secretary language refers to the period of eligibility, the determinant date that's in the statute, 3512B1A, the 10 years. The secretary must define the beginning date for that, or else we would have an absurd result. The Congress, the 10 years would not mean anything.
Sure it does. In this case, this veteran who served his country got married. She gets 10 years to go to school at some amount of months that's limited in here.
45.
What's absurd about that?
The absurd result would obtain if the veteran, as Judge Green posed in the hypotheticals, was able to rekindle the 10-year eligibility period.
Let's even go to the situation, which is a hypothetical, not here. The veteran served his country. He's now 100% disabled. He came back. He got married after the 10-year period. His wife goes, gets education. She dies. He gets married again. He's lost that income that she had. He doesn't get but what VA gives him. She goes, gets education, and it happens three times. And the guy's fortunate and it happens a fourth time. What congressional purpose would say we don't want that?
Again, Your Honor, we look back to the legislative history that we've already discussed, and we believe that the proper interpretation of the statute is that this is a readjustment benefit. In fact, Title 35 is entitled Readjustment Benefits. Therefore, the notion is that this is a period of time during which the veteran and his spouse may readjust to this permanent and total disability period and therefore become part, allow the spouse to become part of the mainstream. So as a result of 3512B1A, we promulgated the regulation that provides the three dates that are derived from the veteran's rating, not from the spouse's, quote, rating, as would be as argued by Mr. Overby. It is so that's where we tail back to the period of eligibility, the 10-year period of eligibility, starting on the date that either notice or effective date of the veteran's permanent and total disability. The again, as I couched the argument to begin with in my opening statement,
Mr. Hutter,
this is a policy argument. Yes, sir.
Congress in 34, Section 3462, when it dealt with eligibility for educational benefits for veterans.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
They knew how to write in the statute a delimiting period for completion, specifically. Do you find any reason why they would not have done so in the next chapter in Section 3500?
Your Honor, the statutes were promulgated at different times, and one statute is clear and one statute is not.
Well, we'll all agree that then that 3512 is not clear.
Exactly correct, Your Honor.
Well, just for the hence record, our just reference. For the record, we don't all agree, Chief Judge.
Well, I think it's arguable. It is arguable that it's clear. And if it's arguable that it's clear, or if you take one position that it's not clear, the regulation is offered to clarify?
Just to be clear, the brief submitted by the Secretary indicated there was no gap here.
Yeah, I was going to get to that because many times in the Secretary's brief it is stated that it is clear. And then I keep reading it and I see if the person had been changed, the term person had been changed to veteran, it made a lot of difference, wouldn't it?
Agreed, Your Honor. The intent, if we take A and B together, we believe it's clear. But it's the notion of that parenthetical and the reference to the regulation, that parenthetical gives leave for the Secretary to prepare a regulation. And if I'm not sure I understood your question about the regulation, Your Honor. In other words, are you asking should we clarify the regulation to make it conform with our interpretation of the statute?
No, I was just wondering, were you offering the regulation, or is the regulation offered as a not only an implementation of the statute, but would it tend to clarify anything in the statute?
We believe it clarifies the as determined by the Secretary language that's in 3512B1A, and that the Congress intended for the Secretary to promulgate clarification in regulation as a result of that parenthetical.
Prior to OZER, was there a 10-year limit?
It was an 8-year limit.
It was an 8-year limit.
The original statute, 68, was an 8-year limit. I think it changed in 74, even before OZER, to a 10-year. Your Honor, if I may, I'd like to address Mr. Overby's contention that the rating that's referred to in the statutory history is it pertains to the rating of the spouse rather than the rating of the veteran. As I began to indicate in my discussion with Judge Castle, this court has determined what the meaning of rating is, and I would argue that even and in spite of the 30B submission that Mr. Overby provided that refers to M22-4, this court has weighed in and has made it very clear that the term rating means average impairments of earning capacity resulting from diseases and injuries encountered as a result or incident to military service.
Mr. Hutter, just to be clear, you mentioned statute. You're actually referring to the regulation and the M21, not the statute?
I'm sorry, Your Honor. What I'm referring to now is the Connery case, which is...
the definition of rating. But right. You started off by saying that there's some discussion with regard to rating as used in the statute. We're not talking about the statute here, are we?
We're talking about the regulation. I'm sorry, Your Honor. The notion is that the rating that we're talking about here can only be that of the veteran. And therefore, consistent with our interpretation and the way we lay out the statutory and regulatory construct, the rating must apply to that of the veteran, and therefore the delimiting date starts either on the date he was informed or the date that rating became effective. And the spouse, consistent with the statutory scheme in 3512B1B, would allow that spouse to pick any date in between, depending on his or her circumstances. Your Honor, I think that the colloquy here has demonstrated that the court understands the Secretary's argument, and we would argue that and urge the court to affirm the decision of the Board of Veterans Appeals, unless there are further questions. Thank you very much.
Your Honors, I'd just like to make a few points on rebuttal with respect to the last point by my adversary with respect to the Connery decision 3 Vet App. I've noted that that was not the holding of the court. In particular, it was a decision by the court in which the board's decision in that particular case was summarily vacated. That was after an oral argument, and in particular, the language as quoted in the Secretary's brief actually stems from a concurrence. And therefore, we would suggest that that's not particularly the holding of the court with respect to what a rating is. Again, with respect to the M22 provisions that we did submit.
Aren't you trying to put a round peg in a square hole? I mean, the regulation does appear to be talking about the disability ratings of the veteran. Where that derives from, what authority there is for that, is a question I believe you've raised. If you look at the statute, even the section under little b1a of 3512, the big portion where it talks about the 10-year period, they're talking about tying it back to the veteran's date of disability or the notification of his disability. And so the spouse who comes in can pick the date that they're eligible, in this case, when she married, or a date after if it applied. Here it doesn't. If a spouse is married at the time the veteran becomes disabled, you could pick the date the veteran was disabled, the date the veteran was notified, or the date, I guess, you applied. And so, I guess you can pick the date you applied because the 10-year period would begin with one of these two.
Well,
but the regulation, what part of the regulation do you read as being unclear?
I don't, Your Honor, I think...
Or being clear as you interpret it.
Ms. Seipert's construction of the regulation stems from 21.3046A3i's, then it has big A, big B, big C. It says, for spouses for whom VA made a final determination of eligibility after October 26, 1986, shall be the effective date of the rating or the date of notification. The only way we could construe that is that they're speaking to the spouse. Unlike in Big B in 3512B1 Big B, where it talks about notifying the veteran. Here, the Secretary could have utilized language.
What are you comparing it to again? What was the site you compared it to?
I'm comparing 21.3046A3i's Big A, Big B, Big C to the statutory language of Section 3512. B1, big B, little I, which speaks to the date on which the Secretary notifies the veteran. Had the Secretary wanted to use that language in the regulation, while I understand that they've argued for deference, they could have utilized that language. And if that's their contention today, that the effective date of rating is, in fact, the rating to the veteran, I think that would have to go through notice and comment. But we could only construe the regulation itself because it speaks to for spouses for whom VA made a final determination of eligibility. And again, with respect to the concept that a rating is merely focusing on disability itself, Secretary in the M22 provisions uses the language, the veteran's voter contains a rating denying service connection for cause of death. By just using rating denying service connection, so under the Secretary's concept, a disability denied service connection. I don't think that's what they intended in their...
So your interpretation would be that in this instance, the appellant would get the effective date of the rating, which presumably, if it were determined to be the date that she married this disabled veteran, or the date of the notification, which could be 2 years down the road.
Correct.
That would begin the 10-year period.
Correct. And with respect to, as determined by the Secretary, the parenthetical, for example, there could be an issue of whether or not it was a valid marriage. So the Secretary would or through their adjudicators, would actually have to go out and try to make that official determination. That would be subject to a rating decision. It would be considered an administrative rating decision, but it's a matter that would be subject to a rating, just as someone who would be entitled to medical benefits. They're all ratings.
But remember what the language was in...
I'm sorry?
Do you remember what the language was in the old statute concerning determination of the 10-year, of the 8-year period?
I do not have that language in front of me, Your Honor.
Or in Ozer, what they were looking at in terms of determining...
I think in Ozer, Your Honor, I believe they were just looking at whether or not there was a 10-year cutoff. But
there were three conditions, the last of which would have to occur according to the decision.
Yeah.
And what were those conditions?
Off the top of my head, I'm not quite sure, Your Honor. I'd have to look through the Ozer decision. But it speaks to the beginning date of eligibility for spouse. They're talking about this is the regulation itself. The statute, no person made eligible by Section 3501A1D of this title may be afforded educational assistance under this chapter beyond 10 years after whichever the following last occurs. The date on which the Secretary first finds the spouse from whom eligibility is derived has a service-connected total disability permanent in nature.
So they were looking at the veteran's effective date of disability.
I respectfully disagree, Your Honor. The first part of that says the date on which the Secretary first finds a spouse from whom eligibility is derived.
The spouse from whom, well, where does eligibility derived?
Well, according to 3501, it derives from when they become married.
Doesn't it derive from the fact that the veteran spouse has 100% disability?
That is correct, but also whenever the spouse becomes married.
You only get the educational benefit if there's 100% disability.
Correct. And you only
what's the second one?
The second one is the date of death of the spouse from whom eligibility is derived.
So the date of, that has to be the veteran, right?
That would have to be the veteran who dies.
Couldn't be the surviving spouse. Okay.
And the next one?
Yeah.
The date on which the Secretary determines that the spouse from whom eligibility, once again speaking, died of a service-connected disability.
Okay.
But we believe that in order for that person to become eligible under 3501A1D, the spouse actually had to marry the veteran. Otherwise, there would be no reason to have the benefit itself if there was no spouse of the veteran. There's no further questions, Your Honors.
All right. Thank you very much.
Well, I do have.
Okay.
Certainly.
If you would, Mr. Overby.
Sure.
Give me an idea of where you stand relative to the Secretary's argument concerning that this was a readjustment benefit versus a perpetual type benefit.
Well, I believe the benefit, as stated in 3500, goes to preparing the spouse to help the family out. So in the sense of readjustment, that would be a readjustment of the family's income. That's how I view it. in the sense that because Congress specifically said, and it focuses once again, two spouses of veterans, the purpose of assisting them in preparing to support themselves and their families at a standard of living level which the veteran, but for the veteran's death of service-connected disability, could have expected to provide for the veteran's family. The readjustment is because the veteran is 100% disabled and because of the fact that they recognize the income level was a little bit less than what they may have made, that by supporting, by providing educational benefits to the spouse, that would make the adjustment in the income that the family had actually lost.
Okay, thank you.
I have one I'd like to ask. You may be able to clarify. If a veteran is 100% disabled and he's married, the 10-year period begins. We don't have an issue. The veteran dies 20 years later. Is there a new 10-year period?
Yes.
So there was no intent on Congress to limit it to just an adjustment after the veteran first became disabled?
Not from what I gather from reading the statute 3512B1A, the last sentence of that statute. It says that the surviving spouse. So if, again, the veteran, if Ms. Seipert is awarded her Chapter 35 benefits and Mr. Seipert eventually dies, I believe that she would be entitled again.
Would she be limited by the other limiting factors of 45, 48 months of educational?
I believe she would.
So Congress has an overall cap on how much that person could get?
Certainly.
And just one last question. If we had a first wife under the situation where the 10-year period passed and that first wife died, the second wife came in, could be a husband, forgive me, and the veteran then died, then benefits would flow to that second wife.
That is correct.
Even under the secretary's interpretation.
The second spouse would get the benefits, yes. If there's no further questions, we would ask that the court reverse the board's erroneous legal conclusion with an instruction to further adjudicate this consistent with the court's holding. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. The case is submitted. We will greet counsel at the bar and then adjourn.
All rise.
Put cases there, Judge. Thank you so much. What a pleasure to be here. Thank you, Judge. Thank you very much. Nice to see you again.
Sound of the court is adjourned to further order.
Man, well done.
Thank you.
Good job.
We could just not take evidence, you know? I think we should start.
VA even asked me to stop doing it because I was bankrupting out of it.